conversations from the front lines of marketing. This is B2B Growth.
James, I don't know if I've ever fully heard your kind of background and how you got here. I know bits and pieces, but I think it'd be kind of interesting to know you're very marketing minded, and I admire that about you. But then as a CEO, also, there has to be some sales, you know, ability in you too. How was that developed? Like, where does that come from?
Yeah, so I played around with sales early in my career. I think I sold apps to churches for a hot second. I did some biz dev for a technology company that sold into courthouse systems, trying to connect troubled youth to community programs in their area. And so really dabbled in sales, but didn't, I would say the limited success that I had in sales was because of the relational skills that I built, like kind of early in college through my fraternity and a little bit post that, where I would just was genuinely curious and ask good questions and was able to build trust. And through that trust, ended up talking a few people into buying some stuff. But aptitude, or the desire to develop the aptitude for the art and science that is sales, like Rex,
the deeper level.
Yeah. Like when you talk to folks like Rex and, you know, even Olivia and Ben on our team, and they understand nuances of how to navigate the conversation, how to communicate, you know, the order in which to communicate things so that it sets you up to be like all of that stuff. I just never had the interest to try to like hone that craft or hone that skill. And so my sales ability always capped at kind of my natural ability. And as an entrepreneur, it honestly, I mean, the more I listen to Alex Hormozi, I feel like an idiot for not spending more time honing that. Now we're at a scale where we've got people on the team and we have the resources to be able to hire people that are much better at that. And so I don't really necessarily feel as much of the need. I'm sure I've never to have that skill set. But in Sweetfish's like early days of our first year, I did all the selling, obviously, because there's no one else around. And I just did not enjoy it. I mean, it was like life sucking for me to feel like I was, you know, I just had a bad, my mindset around sales was bad. It felt like I was convincing people to do something that they didn't want to do. And that's not the right mindset. That's not the mindset that our sales team has. And like, we legitimately are adding value to companies. But at the time I didn't necessarily see it that way. And so every time I just had anxiety around it, and I would feel all this negative stuff. And so like as earliest I can get out of having to do this, the better. And I just wanted to gear toward just giving value with no kind of transaction tied to that value, which is why content marketing is so, I'm so passionate about the craft of content marketing.
Yep.
That's my story. Like, I've definitely done it. I've sold some things. I got the business to a point where we could bring on, you know, someone like a Logan who tripled the business in his first year that he was at the company. And that's about the extent of my ability. Yes.
I went social media marketing and then into customer success and sale and then an SDR role before coming here. And each has their advantages to know and dabble in. But I was thinking about that a lot. And then I was like, man, I need to ask James, because I saw this post from Kathleen Booth where she was talking about basically, if you want to advance your marketing career, having some experience in a full-time sales role is extremely, extremely valuable. And I resonate with you, James, because the SDR position was one where they're like, oh, you're doing great in customer success. We think you could do really well in like business development and a sales development type role. And so I was over there for like 6 to 8 months and finally was like, I can't do this anymore. Part of it, I think, is the fit and just not like a lack of product knowledge. That was a big, big part of it for me. If you put me in a different industry where I had had deeper level expertise and had seen the benefits of selling that product, I probably would have just liked it more and found more life there. But I can say, coming into Sweetfish with sales experience and having done some like business development, customer success stuff, highly, highly valuable because it changes the way you think of the business as a whole. And that's a lot of what Kathleen was pointing out in her post. And that's, I want to bring that today in this Echo Chamber episode because she really got people engaged in the comments, and there's a lot here. So I won't even read the whole post, but I'll kind of read her three highlights because this is what she sees as experience. Like once you have this experience, it's super valuable for you as a marketer if you spent time in sales. The things you can learn, one of them is recognizing that sales teams are paid on performance, meaning that inadequate enablement, ineffective demand gen campaigns, and poor messaging hit them personally in the form of lower paychecks. That will develop empathy for you. And if you've never spent time in sales, you probably need to go talk to sales to ask them about that experience, because like marketing creates all this material, and if it's half-baked or not close enough to the ICP, it is directly impacting them, or they'll just bypass you straight up. That did happen in my previous position where I was like, we don't have the right assets, I'll just go make it myself. And so watching out for that. The second thing she says, understanding the metrics that sales teams use to build forecasts and develop headcount plans and translating that into marketing strategies designed to deliver what sales needs to be successful in the right time frame. And then the third one here, learning the workflows and tools that the sales team uses in their daily routine as context for building marketing, sales, communication channels, and processes that introduce the least amount of friction. I think this is partially why there's the rise of the revenue team, is that third one. So much has been talked about and discussed there. But as you see those three and you think more broadly on marketers really understanding sales, what are your thoughts on this post?
How do you grow a B2B audience? Here's what I would do. Talk to your ideal buyers, develop a point of view worth sharing, record at least one long form piece of content weekly, slice that content into smaller pieces for distribution, put some ad spend behind it, ask for feedback so you can iterate, and then improve that workflow every single week. Now, this may sound simple when it's listed out like this, but we all know each one of those steps takes time and effort. And that's why we're here to help you. We want to help you start a show that is your market's favorite. We want you to grow your B2B audience and develop an irrational bias for your brand. If you're interested, learn more now at sweetfishmedia.com.
You said something, Benji, that really stood out to me right before you went into these three that I don't think can be understated, which is what sales does is gives you a level of business acumen and understanding of not just your business, but it forces you to understand the business of your customers, because you have to be able to align the value of what you're providing to the value of, to like, you have to make that the business case of why the person on the other end of the transaction needs it and should buy it.
Yep.
And in doing so, that's one thing that I observed about Logan whenever he first stepped into sales 4 years ago or whatever for us, was he was selling printers. So he obviously understood printers, but he had to understand the business case for why a company would need to figure out the digitization of all of these different, you know, functions. It's not just printing. There's all these other things that printers do. And so it forced him to understand the context of lots of different businesses, because he sold into different verticals and different types of companies. And I think that that's actually a superpower, understanding business. It's unfortunate. Like I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day, when you look back at least the business school that I went to, I don't feel like I walked out with a piece of paper and a degree, but I didn't walk out with true business acumen and understanding how different business models work, what the levers in different types of businesses are. Sales, you have to understand that in order to sell your solution into that company. So I just wanted to elaborate on that, because you touched on it before getting into hers, and what you said is so, so true. Another thing here that I think the empathy piece is real. We all know that salespeople are paid on performance, but do we really think about that?
Yeah,
probably not. We complain that they complain that their leads aren't good enough, but it's like, well, their paycheck is dependent on it. So that makes sense. Understanding their metrics, I think probably not as common. I don't think it's common for marketers to truly understand the metrics that lead to what their compensation is. They know that they're compensated based on performance, but they don't know how necessarily that bread gets buttered. And then I think I would agree with you on that third point as well. And that's why you're seeing kind of the rise of these revenue teams. One other thing about her post that I wanted to call out was, you know, she works at Pavilion now. Kathleen works at Pavilion. She's the SVP of marketing and member success there. I just feel like this post is really valuable in and of itself. But there's a paragraph in here toward the bottom of the post. It's not the closing paragraph, but the paragraph right above it, but where she says, but there are other ways to gain this understanding of those three key ideas. She talks about how working in a sales role is one way, but another way are programs like Pavilion CRO School, SDR School, Front Rank Sales Manager School, that can provide marketers with these deep insights into sales and are a great way to build the kind of cross-functional muscle needed to overcome challenges with sales and marketing alignment. You see a lot of posts that go viral that the post is pretty disconnected from who the person that posted it's core business.
Yeah.
And so Kathleen has figured out a way here to really drop legitimate value and give marketers something to chew on in terms of how they can empathize with their sales counterparts in a way that very directly points to the value of her own company at Pavilion.
That's a super good point, because the most of the posts that you see like this, and I have to say, thankfully, I've seen less of the sales and marketing are always in conflict. And like, I've seen less of those posts on LinkedIn. So kudos to everyone for toning it back, like toning it down a little bit. But she is taking essentially that angle, saying develop that empathy cross-functionally with sales and marketing. But she's doing it by giving you three really good ways of doing it from the position of someone who spent time in sales. So there's a weight to her words that's different. And then, yeah, she has a direct tie to the company that she works for, but it feels very natural. In fact, when you pointed it out, I was like, oh, I saw the value here, and I didn't even really realize her plug for Pavilion. I saw that something was tagged there, but I was focused more on what this means for marketers. So that's a good call out. I found myself, one thing I was doing naturally here at Sweetfish the last year was caring a lot about what us as a marketing team handed to sales, like, and having sales enablement material, and seeing Kathleen's post, I was like, oh, that's just because I spent time as an SDR. And I was like, man, I really wish I had just a video that showcased a win. Like, I know we have them. We talk about them in our stand-up meetings, but we never do go the extra step to get that recorded in a way that's meaningful that the sales team can use. And that might sound like a no-brainer for companies that are more developed, but there's so much that gets lost, especially in startup world or when your marketing team is small. And so this might just be a reminder that it's easier now than ever to get sales enablement material that's valuable for your sales team, and marketing can help position that material very effectively if you guys are working together as a revenue team. And so that was triggered in my mind. Want to bring up one comment here too, James, and get your thoughts on it. But there was a comment on this post that I guess I would say I disagree with the take. And I think in the short term, you might nod your head in agreement and say amen. But if you play it out, I don't know if I agree. So Martin said, sales is marketing to an individual. Marketing is sales to masses of people. Each side should go work on the other side to really become great at their roles. How does that, like, sales is marketing to an individual, marketing is sales to the masses of people. Any initial thoughts when I read that to you?
As we were talking about it earlier, you had mentioned that it's just kind of reductive and oversimplified, which I think I agree with. And again, like, I don't want to steal your thinking because we were talking about this before we hit record, but I just think that idea of marketing is sales to masses of people, if that's truly what you think of marketing, then you're not going to build a whole lot of affinity.
Mm-hmm.
You're just trying to sell to a whole bunch of people. And that might not be what he's saying here. He might be talking about doing more top of funnel type stuff that's not directly related to the product. But the way it reads here, marketing is sales to masses of people, that's not the kind of marketing that's actually going to reach masses of people the way social algorithms are working. Like, if you're just doing deep product marketing, talking about your product, like up and doing a lot of navel gazing, I have not found that to be the case with exceptional, like, unless it's just you're in a very rare product where the product itself is fascinating and people are just like the Boston Robotics or something like that. Like that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, the product does kind of get its own hype, but that's my pushback there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the marketing is sales to masses. I almost think it's better if you were to put that in an ABM frame. Like in that position, yeah, you're marketing to a limited set and it is essentially trying to move people further down funnel. If you're thinking of top of funnel, if your position is already that what we're trying to do is just market and essentially sell to masses of people, it sets your mindset up wrong around the content that you create versus if you're just creating hyper-relevant content that makes people aware of your potential solution downline. So it's a small nuance there, but I think if you're an early stage company, you're probably creating the marketing materials that are needed at the bottom of the funnel first. And that is what I would say, like, then I agree with Martin. But the longer the time goes on, the more you're going to say, okay, we need top of funnel stuff. And that's where it could taint the type of content you create and what you focus on making. And I would just be wary of that.
All right. That wraps it up for this one. We are out.